Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, through her childhood experiences, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. My dear friends, I have spent decades studying nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife evidence, and as part of that, I spent thousands of dollars on perhaps a dozen mental mediums, some of whom were famous. I got horrendous results. I came to the conclusion a decade ago that mediums have powers that are dim at best, and most of them will cold read, they'll guess. I gave up on mediums. I was the world's biggest skeptic, but I was wrong. Around the turn of this century, Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson conducted double-blind tests of a triple-blind, a series of very prominent mediums, and he found some that were more than 90% accurate under laboratory conditions, with odds against chance in the millions to one. Read his wonderful 2002 book, The Afterlife Experiments, and you'll learn that some mediums are in touch with the dead. So, after reading his book, I came to accept that fact, but still, I had never thought of consulting a medium on my own until the summer of 2014, when I began to think that somebody in spirit was trying to get in touch with me. So I made an appointment with a spiritual medium who had come very highly recommended, and in February of 2015, I had a reading with Suzanne Wilson of Carefree, Arizona. It was my first reading with a medium in more than a decade, and that was the day when my whole life changed. Suzanne is a genuine spiritual medium. I still think there aren't that many who are really, really good, but wow, do I realize now that there are some who are very good indeed. Suzanne is joining us today to tell us about what she does, how she does it, and how consulting a medium might be helpful to you. Welcome, Suzanne. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Hi, Roberta. Thanks for having me. I'm delighted.
We've talked before on Seek Reality, and I sort of think of you as a semi-regular guest, in fact. But it's always, I think, important because we have a lot of new listeners. I'd like to ground us by just talking about a little bit about your past. You always sort of knew you had gifts, right? Or what? It started in childhood, I think.
Oh, yeah. I was one really weird little kid. I would see colors around people and spirit lights, and sometimes even that looked like a full-on person standing behind another child on the playground, and it would be their dead grandparent.
Yeah,
I knew pretty early on that I was very, very different.
And you had a grandmother, too, didn't you, that had gifts?
I think that the gifts ran all the way through all of my family members, but the one that helped me the most was my grandfather, who actually was a preacher, a minister in a church, and a closeted medium himself, because, you know, in those days, you couldn't be out as a medium,
right.
Especially not if you were a preacher.
Right. That's right. So I'm just trying to remember our conversations about this. You had a near-death experience that sort of opened your eyes, right?
Well, I did, and much later in life. In fact, it wasn't until 2007. Most of my life, all I wanted to do was fit in and be normal. I went
right.
to college. I got a bachelor's in management, a master's in public administration. I'm a certified senior professional in human resources. I've been a university director. I've been a corporate HR director and manager. And my psychic abilities and my abilities to see and talk with the dead were a big secret. Nobody
oh, okay.
was supposed to know about it.
Right. We all have a hobby. But you weren't doing anything with it, right? You were sort of living
Not
with
really.
It.
Not really. I was doing little readings for friends of friends, and I was going and taking seminars and reading books. And that 2007 near-death experience changed everything. After that, not only did I not want to hide my abilities? I couldn't hide my abilities. I couldn't shut them down. The dead were everywhere. It was like a bad horror movie.
Well, what we've learned is that when people have these gifts, it's almost like a magnet for the dead, a light that they can see and home in on. So it's not surprising that at some point they homed in on you, because you certainly have tremendous gifts. They were natural, but you had to hone them, right? I mean, what's if someone's listening and saying, you know, I kind of see weird things, what do you do to hone those gifts?
Well, I'll tell you something. That's a great question, because I do believe that everyone is born with intuitive abilities, and you have the ability to sense your own beloved dead people. But I don't think that everybody is born with mediumship abilities. I'm an evidential medium, meaning that when I connect with your beloved dead person who I don't know anything about, they're going to give some little detail that only the two of you know,
Yes. Something
that no one could know. And I believe that that kind of talent is born within you. I don't think that I can create a medium. So everybody can get their own gifts from their own beloved dead, but to be able to give clear, accurate, healing messages from spirit to other people on any kind of a consistent basis, you got to be born with it, and then you've got to train for it.
That explains a lot to me, because I think some of the mediums that I've tried to consult with probably had the gift, but they didn't have it to the extent that you have it. They didn't have the ability to do it for others, right? That's the difference.
You're right. And I think that's where my corporate, my university, my education background comes in. I'm very methodical. And, you know, almost OCD to a fault. I have processes.
I know you. I know.
Checklists, procedures. And I was my own worst critic. I was never happy enough, always pushing my evidence to be better and better.
Yeah, as I've worked with you, I've come to see that you are, and I think that's one of the things I like about you, that you are very compulsive. I mean, people who go to a medium want that kind of precision. They don't want this to be just another day at the office for you, but they want the gift of real discernment and real evidence. So I think that's what makes you so good, the fact that you're, as you say, OCD. But maybe it's hard for your poor husband to live with, but it certainly helps us.
So, yeah, I had to work really hard to make our bedroom a no-fly zone. I mean, can you imagine? You're getting romantic, and all of a sudden you look up, and there's some dead guy standing in the doorway waving hello.
Has that happened?
More than once. And I would be divorced by now. I'm married 28 years. I would be divorced if I hadn't learned how to handle these things. And now I have the very distinct pleasure and honor of being of service to others, not only by doing readings and past life regressions as a hypnotherapist, but I also can teach other people how to tap into and make the most of their own intuitive abilities, because I had to learn it all myself.
Yes. And you were able, I know, to tell, basically, as you say, to make certain areas a no-fly zone. I love that. To keep them out of certain parts of your house and keep them just in the hallway, right?
Well, yeah, the hallway, it's kind of like a runway, and there will be people that will show up, and our two little puppies will start barking and circling, and they're all happy to see people, and my husband's like, okay, is that dead one mine, yours, or a client's?
Oh, my goodness.
He's used to it.
Someone calls you, and or calls your assistant, makes the appointment. And at the appointed time, you call that person. Have you been, I know you've meditated ahead of time. Have you been in touch with all you have is a name. I have got this name, Jane, here on a paper, right? And do they know which Jane it is? And so the loved ones of that person start to come in into your runway, as you say?
Every soul, dead or alive, has its own unique soul print. It's like a fingerprint. So when Roberta makes an appointment to have a reading, that vibe has gone out from your soul print to all those who you have loved that have transitioned to heavenly home. they get a notice. It's almost like a text to the other side, and like, hey, Roberta's having a reading next Tuesday at 2. Tell everybody. Come on, let's go.
Oh, that's funny.
So for me, when I sit down and meditate, I will write your first name, Roberta, on a legal pad, and I'll spend about 15 minutes before the call saying, hi, I'm the medium. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. These are my rules. I call them my rules of engagement. You must be from the white light. You must have Roberta's best and highest good at heart. I can see, hear, and feel you. And here's how you communicate with me. And by the way, here's my team of guides. They'll help you out. And we just get all organized. It works out great.
Well, having been on the receiving end, I can say it does work great. I just haven't had an appreciation of the fact that a lot of stuff was going on ahead of time. Now, people will tell me, because they'll say, how did you learn about the afterlife? And I'll say, well, there were tremendous communications through mediums in the first half of the 20th century, and that's been my main source of basic information. They'll say, but it says in the Bible you shouldn't do that. We know that that's not true, of course. We know that many of the people in the Old Testament did consult spirits and oracles, and we also know that it says in the first epistle of John that we should test the spirits to see if they're of God. And certainly that implies we will be talking to spirits, we just have to be careful. So what you just said is that was good advice, that you have to try the spirits. You have to make sure that you're talking to spirits who are not up to mischief, but who are only trying to do what's right. Is that right? Am I saying that accurately?
Yes, and I don't just rely on my own discernment. Like I said, everybody has a spiritual team. My team is helping me with my life and with my life's work. Everybody has their own individual team of guides, angels, loved ones in the light that are giving you gentle nudges, that are helping you with your discernment, that are empowering your gut feelings. And I have one badass guardian angel who works with me.
Yes.
Her name is Mariella. And if I'm occupied during a reading and there's some passerby type of spirit that sees all this bright light going on and is just curious and wants to interlope, she'll just kick them out. She'll say, you're not invited here. So I have my whole team supporting me, and so do you.
That's
just
true.
Supporting you in different things that you're doing in your life day to day.
That's true of everybody listening. Everyone has at least one primary spirit guide. Usually they're with us through life. And we also have a guardian angel who has never been in a body. And it's a different category, different class of entity. But their job is to keep you safe, and they take that job very seriously. And as you say, you have a particularly badass angel, which is a good thing. I've noticed when we do a reading, you always do a grounding and protection prayer. Why do you do that?
It's very important that not only am I grounded and protected, that my client is as well. And I know that some mediums, even though they don't do a prayer right at the beginning of the reading with that client, they have probably prayed for that client as well. Because, number one, if you're grounded, that means that you have your connection very strong with Mother Earth, but you're also open to receiving clear, accurate, healing messages. Now, if you come into a reading as a client and you're ungrounded, you're scatterbrained, you're hungover, or tired,
right.
Or you're
right.
Worried and scared and in fear, not only will the communication not be as good and as strong and clear, but you won't get as much out of it. So that little two-minute grounding and protection prayer that I do at the beginning of people, their readings, I just say to them, look, I've had people say, I'm not religious. I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. This is about
right.
Setting the intention. Everything's about intention. And you know what? Your reading will be better if we do this. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, then go ahead. It works.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly does. And it makes you feel good, too. I love the way it's part of why I enjoy doing these sessions with you, because it makes you feel good to go through that prayer and feel grounded. And it's the same every time, too. I think that's kind of comforting. But all right, so someone has come to you and there are people lined up and stuff. It doesn't always go smoothly, right?
No, not all readings are created equal. And a lot of it has to do with the level of the three-way communication. It's the trajectory. I tune into my client's aura, the electromagnetic energy field that's around them, first. And it's through that aura that I can tune into their team. I'm in an office building. So if I don't tune into my client's aura first, I might be picking up stuff from the dentist's office.
Oh, that's
door.
Right. Yes,
so,
I
right?
Didn't hear that.
So,
right.
So it's like their aura, the client's aura becomes sort of a filter. It can enhance the reading or it can detract from the reading. So the client's state of mind has a whole lot to do with it. Plus, there's some readings that just don't go. They just, and I have learned over time not to take that personally, and I can tell in the first 10 minutes, it's just not happening. I may see a brick wall or a cement wall or something like that. You got to trust that. That could just mean that it's not time right now, or the person's not open or ready. And we just, when that's happened, we'll just try it again in 90 days, or the person just decides, that's fine. No harm, no foul. I don't charge them money if it doesn't happen. But no, it's not perfect. How could it be perfect? These people are dead.
Well, yeah, but that's a little handicap, not a big one. My wonderful guest is Suzanne Wilson, who is, in my view, the greatest living spiritual medium on the planet. She does wonderful work, and I've sent her many people. Since I had my first great experience about a year and a half ago, I've sent her a number of people, dozens probably, and everybody reports back to me what wonderful experiences they had. So, I mean, I know you don't always probably hit a home run, Suzanne, but you've hit quite a few for the people I've sent to you, so I'm very grateful for that.
It's a pleasure to be of service, Roberta, and I just think the world of you. You're doing great work educating people.
We try. Now, let's talk about what I'd just like to mention a little bit about my own experience, because my mother had been dead for 2 years. I thought it was my mother who was trying to get me to go to you. It turned out it was not. It was someone else, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But what you seem to be very good at doing is getting them to say something that's unique to them, that nobody else would say. I mean, if mom is just saying, gee, it's beautiful here, I like the flowers, there's nothing from that that makes you know it's your mother. But my mother's personality came through so amazingly, and she said a couple of things about herself. Here's the one that got me. My mother painted her eyebrows on. She had no eyebrows to speak of, neither do I really, and she painted them on her whole entire life. And so then Suzanne said, why is she pointing at her eyebrows? What is, she just told me she doesn't have to paint them on now. They're always there. She said, your mother is actually funny. She just said that they're always there. She wakes up with them. And then she said, ha ha, but we don't sleep here. So that's the kind of informal, fun relationship you can have with your loved ones if you go to a really good medium. It's just a love fest. But the person who wanted to talk to me that day was someone who I'm going to be talking about in subsequent weeks. And this was a surprise to both of us. It was probably 10, 15 minutes before the end of our hour. Suzanne said, your spirit guides are here. They want to talk to you. I said, bring them on. What the heck? And we discovered that day that my primary spirit guide had in a previous lifetime been somebody famous. I feel, when I say this, I feel a little bit like I'm saying, guess what? I was Cleopatra in a prior lifetime. That's not it at all. We have come, I think, you and I, Suzanne, to accept the fact that we're dealing with a genuine entity. Why don't you tell that story?
Well, it was interesting because the guide that stepped forward was a very unassuming gentleman. And definitely a gentleman, very polite, very formal in his mannerism, and not really very patient, though, very businesslike.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You know, I almost felt like he was willing to talk to me because I was intelligent. And things were lined up for you to have your reading with me because he needed a certain kind of person to be able to talk with you. And he just said, my name is Thomas. I don't think about what that name means, because listen, guides have had many, many lives. That's how they got to be guides. They had to amass tremendous life experience to become specialists.
Yes. Yes, and he is somewhat impatient. He's a little more mellow now, I think, but this carried over from that lifetime quite well. And so tell people who he was. I knew immediately who he was, by the way. I had had an obsession with this historic figure much of my life. So when he said Thomas, I said, absolutely, I'll say it. I said, oh, Thomas Jefferson. It turned out to be who he was. And he was not interested remotely in his Thomas Jefferson lifetime. He had had actually to have a subsequent lifetime just to get rid of what he thought was the imbalance that he had gained by having wealth and power. But you were shocked too, right?
I didn't expect it. I mean, I do meet dead celebrities from time to time. When you talk to thousands of dead people, some of them are going to have had famous lives. But because the fact that he wasn't here to be Jefferson, he wasn't coming into your meeting to have anything to do with that life, he was here with a very specific agenda. He wanted to get a message out of compassion and love and to save this planet and
yes,
its people. And so that's really what got my attention. I wasn't even thinking anymore after the initial shock.
Yeah. Well, it took me longer to get over it than it took you. I was a bit of a groupie there for a while, but I'm past that now. Now, I think that that's a very important point. We tend to think of people who are famous or have been famous or have done things as always wanting to be that person. And that really seems to be not the case at all. They get very much over whatever that lifetime has been. They go through the life review. Nobody's happy with their lifetime. Nobody feels, oh, I aced that one. And he certainly didn't feel that way. And then they go on to other things. They're thinking about something else. You say he doesn't even look like Thomas Jefferson now.
No, not at all. He just looks like a regular guy. In fact, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Clive Owen, the actor.
Really?
Good looking, so that doesn't hurt, right?
Right. But he's definitely not, there's no red hair and there's no aquiline face as he had. So this is, who else have you met that we would recognize as being famous? Who else has come to you?
Well, I was out in Hollywood and I was working with Professor Gary Schwartz and some other folks on some controlled environment experiments. And one of the things that came up was I was able to see the premiere of the movie Marilyn Monroe Declassified by Paul Davids. And I was sitting with another medium, Jamie Clark, and right as the movie ended and the producer was screening it for us and for Gary Schwartz, Marilyn Monroe walked right into the room and leaned down and kissed the producer on the cheek and then proceeded to come over and stand in front of the other medium, who's a guy, and just kind of flirt with him. But she was just a normal looking, it's Marilyn Monroe, but she just had this attitude of, I'm blending in, I like my movie, I appreciate you doing the movie for me. There's been many others, but they really just kind of pop up occasionally and unexpectedly. And sometimes somebody would show me a celebrity to get me to say a name. Like I can see, Jennifer Aniston to say the name Jennifer. Okay.
Yes.
I can tell the difference between when a person's actually coming in and when someone's being shown to me as a symbol. I'd had Marilyn as a symbol to say the name Marilyn for years. And finally, I get to meet her. It was awesome.
That's great. The thing is, most people don't attract entities to the readings unless they knew that person personally, right? But didn't you recently have Abraham Lincoln show up?
That was a great treat. I was doing a reading for a woman whose father passed, and her dad came into the reading and said that he brought Abraham Lincoln with him. And I thought, she's not going to believe me. Oh, gosh, but I'll say it anyway. I say everything the Spirit gives me. I just have to give it, right? So I told her, Abraham Lincoln's here with your dad. And she's like, oh, hi, Mr. Lincoln. Nice to meet you. Dad always said the first thing he'd do when he died was get over there and meet you and thank you for your service. So
isn't that a wonderful thing, though? That's it what we can meet all these people when we get there. Tell us about past life regression, Suzanne. How does that go, and what do you do?
I first became interested in past life regression in the 90s, and I talked my husband into going to a seminar with Dr. Brian Weiss. And, of course, I ended up taking training in Florida with Dr. Weiss. And the experience that I had just showed me sort of like an evolution of learning of things that I've experienced in life. And I could see where I had carried over fear from one life to another. And I knew that if I didn't release some of these fears, that I'd carry them again. And it was just very interesting to me, but I ended up not having time to really do much with it. I put past life regression on the shelf for a while and just sort of left it there and focused on the mediumship. And then my clients started asking for past life regression. I checked with my guides. They said, yeah, go for it. I went back to school and trained and certified through a college as a hypnotherapist. And now what I found is that it's really interesting because when you're a medium and you regress someone, you can often see exactly what your client is seeing while they're in hypnosis. It's like I enter the scene with them, and I'm able to help them at the end to sort of process and synthesize their experience. And oftentimes they'll have a question that comes up from an experience. Well, here, I'm a medium. Your guide's standing right here. Your guide's going to help answer that question. It's all right. Great healing and learning.
So, but now people are wondering how it feels. They're hypnotized, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then do you say something like, "We'd like to go to a lifetime that was significant for your life today," or something? What do you say?
We talk beforehand, and we set an intention for the session. We do the grounding and protection, which, you know, I always do. And we talk about the intention, like what are the things that are most on your mind in your life right now? What do you need help with? What do you need to do right now? What do you need to work on? And as we talk about that, the intention becomes clear. That sets the stage for that client's subconscious mind to automatically go to the two or three lives that we visit in a session that will most help them now.
So you do two or three. Wow, that's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Do people always end up near the end of a lifetime when they go to a lifetime? Because I tried this once about 15 years ago, and I got into two lifetimes where I was about to be killed, and I said, I don't think I want to do that anymore. Is that typical, or is it just a significant part of that lifetime you go to?
Well, believe it or not, the death scene is sometimes the most healing experience for some, because there are some people that need to realize that life is eternal, that we never die. The body is just the shell, the meat suit that we unzip and step out of. So it can be very, very healing. But I've given a suggestion ahead of time that there's no fear, there's no discomfort. You simply observe. I won't make them see the death if they don't want to. But, you know, Roberta, everybody dies, right? So I have had clients have a series of violent deaths. But they don't get upset about it. It just can explain a few things. Like, for example, recently I had one where she was pushed in front of the subway. And so she's always had a fear of going on the subway in this life. Well, it's not about, she thought it was about going underground that scared her. Yeah. No, that's how you died before. She was able to release that fear just by remembering where it came from.
I think that's a very significant point. Just going back to the scene where a phobia or a fear was created is sufficient to release that fear. I know, because it's happened to me personally. It's the most amazing thing. So that's, if you've got peculiar fears in this lifetime, if you're worried about some things that doesn't, phobias, whatever, looking at doing a past life regression with a good therapist is a wonderful way to think about getting rid of that fear. I cured myself of a fear of heights that was crippling with a past life regression that I did myself, actually.
Yes.
So it's surprising what can happen. I mean, it's amazing. Our minds are so powerful and creative. We have no idea. So, all right, let's talk about something else that you do, and we only can get started on it. We'll finish it next. But you also have begun to work with people on the fact that they're empaths, right? Explain what that means to people.
An empath is someone who can easily sense the moods, feelings, emotions, and sometimes even the physical ailments of other people. They can walk into the room and just feel the energy in the room. They can meet someone for the first time and just feel how that person is feeling. And what I'm finding is I've been getting over the years more and more empaths, and they're trying to learn balance. How do they slough off the energy that isn't theirs, recognize that it's not theirs and let it go? How do they cope? And my contention is that empathy can be an asset. It doesn't have to be a liability, but there's too many people that let it be a liability and they just give until they're exhausted, and I can help them with that.
Empaths. How would people know that maybe that they would have this kind of thing going on and might need help?
Well, first off, more and more people who haven't been terribly empathic before are becoming that way now. We have a consciousness shift on the planet, and people are awakening to emotions and feelings that are in the collective consciousness, in the ether. And a simple way to say that is some people that weren't that sensitive before are getting more sensitive, and it's the shift in consciousness. You're going to know that it's happening to you, or you're going to know that you have a child perhaps that's high empathy because they take things very personally, they can be quite emotional, and they are primarily concerned in life with fairness to others and how others are feeling, and they exude compassion all of the time. Now, that is not to be confused with someone who is neurotic or I am not a counselor or a therapist, so I always tell people, you know, tell me if you're in therapy right now or what's going on, and once I can identify that, okay, the coast is clear, let's work together, I can give them some tools to manage that, but that's how it presents.
And some people, as you say, have children who are more, sort of indigo children, they've been called, children who are much more sensitive. That seems almost to be an epidemic now of children coming in who are going to help with the shift in the second half of this century, so that it's wonderful they're here. But
yes,
you can help parents to help their children who are very sensitive?
Yes, we need these star children that are being born, and we're going to have a whole lot more of them. And you said indigo, they're crystal children. I'm telling you, I am hearing constantly now from parents who are begging me to work with their kids. I don't want to work with the kids. I want to mentor the parent, because it's going to be the parent that is with them, not me. I don't go home with them at night, and I don't hear what happened at school when they come home from school. So when I mentor the parent, it's like a train the trainer. I'm empowering them to help their child. And you know, Roberta, this may surprise you, but often the parent will come to me saying, I'm here so you can train me to help my sensitive child who sees auras or spirits or is just very, very uberly compassionate to kids to a detriment. And then I'll say, okay, fine, I want to do a few exercises with you. And 9 times out of 10, I find that the parent also has these abilities that can run in the families.
Oh, really?
So I'm able to help both of them.
Wow. So what's your percentage, would you say? What percentage of your practice is just mediumship? What percentage maybe past life regression? And then what percentage helping people who are sensitive?
Oh, that's a great question. It is shifting. Lately, it used to be about 70% readings, and it's down to about 50%, and the other part is split with the hypnotherapy and the intuition development, because I've found that the hypnotherapy people that are doing past life regression, now they want to be students and vice versa. So it's nice to have a portfolio of things that can enrich someone's life. A reading, absolutely. I think of as, a reading can help you right now, and it gives you reassurance that life is eternal. But once you know that, you know your loved ones are happy, you know that time is passing fast for them, they're not in pain, they're not in grief, that there really is no time, and you know that they're still part of your life, how many readings do you really need?
That's true.
Let's enrich your life by showing you how to tap into who you are as a soul. You're only here on Earth at this point in time because you have a mission. Let's help find out what that is and get on it.
Absolutely. But some people want to be in touch with their spirit guides. Do you do a lot of that work too?
Yes. That's always a part of my intuition mentoring. I am huge on getting to know at least the one guide that is in charge of your team, the one coordinator, because it's this one guide that's always there with you from birth to death, while others will go for a season or a reason and work with you depending on what is going on in your life.
So what would you say to people who are thinking of consulting a medium? How would they know that now might be a good time or a bad time? For example, you don't do it right after a death, right? You wait one little time to pass?
I have come up with 90 days as a general rule of thumb. It's not a hard and fast rule, but 90 days would be good to just assure that if the soul needs some R&R time over there, or they may be in a rehab type of spa setting in the afterlife for a while. Like if somebody dies of cancer, they've really, really suffered. Sometimes they just want to get there and be pampered and rest and have the angels sing to them and hold them. They're not going to show up for the reading, right? So give them time. But more importantly, you, as a grieving person, need time. If you're going to sit and sob your eyes out all the way through the reading, you're not going to hear the information, and the energy needs to be more settled. It's a three-way communication, remember? So just give it a little bit of time.
It can sometimes be the case, too, that because grief is such a low-energy emotion, it can actually work to block. I hear from a lot of people who are finding that they can't be in touch with their loved one who has died, and then we talk about it a little bit, and they're completely blocked. They really almost don't want it to happen. But we're coming to the end of our time, and I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you. How would they reach you?
CarefreeMedium.com. I live and work in Carefree, Arizona. It's an eccentric little sort of like an artist and horse person's enclave north of Phoenix in Scottsdale. So it's carefreemedium.com. And the phone number is 1-480-203-2336.
But you have a waiting list now, right?
I do. And I try not to think about it because I can become overwhelmed thinking of 800 people waiting for me.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
Oh, yes. We have booked me for about a year, and then I have a long list after that. And I'm doing the best that I can, but I give everybody 100%. So I have to manage my time very carefully.
I know that you do. But tell people that you heard Suzanne on Seek Reality. If you're desperate to have a reading, maybe she'll jump you to the head of the line because she and I are friends. Just I tell people, tell them you're my friend. But this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Suzanne. And we'll have you back. I want to talk about some other things like the elevation of the consciousness of the planet. Thank you so much for sharing your day with us. Don't forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Now, our guest next week will be Rich Haas, whose brand new book, Sacred Quantum Metaphysics, is just out. No less a light than Dr. Gary Schwartz wrote its foreword, and he says this may be one of the more insightful and enlightening books you'll read in your lifetime. I'm about to read it. It's just arrived. For most people, the most difficult part of trying to feel certain that we easily survive our deaths is trying to understand the physics of it all. Now, Rich's new book talks about that, but he also shows you how you can use knowledge from this emerging science to begin to transform your own life. So please join us next week. Our guest today has been the extraordinarily gifted spiritual medium, Suzanne Wilson. After I had tested, I think it was a dozen mediums, including some very famous ones. One of them cost over $1,000 just for an hour. I found that every single one of them had done cold readings. I mean, they were basically guessing or leading me. And I decided then that it was just a crock. Very few people could do it, if any. A year and a half ago, February of 2015, I had a reading with Suzanne, and in 1 hour, she transformed my life. Not only did she show me that indeed there are some real, real mediums who are in contact with our own particular dead loved ones and can give us such reassurance with little peculiar things that our dead loved ones say that there's just no question, it's all real. But also, she put me in touch with my primary spirit guide, who had been there all my life. That's the way they are. They operate behind the scenes at night. She put me in touch with him, and now he and I are a team, and we are going to try to save the world. So I urge you to get a deeper understanding of your own spirit guides. It makes such a difference. As you know, I've written some nonfiction books, and one of them is also about to come out now, so I ought to just point that out. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, about which I'll talk in a few weeks, My Thomas, which is the only book that Thomas Jefferson wrote about his life, and he wrote it 150 years after he died, Flying High in Spirit, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and the brand new The Fun of Growing Forever, which shows us how to make the most rapid possible spiritual progress. Plus, it's a lot of fun. Plus, it's going to make much, much richer your afterlife. You'll find recent episodes of Seek Reality on bbmglobalnetwork.com. And there will be episodes going back as far as 2013 on podcasts on webtalkradio.net and iTunes. And some of the older episodes actually are being rebroadcast now on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. So I'm hearing from people about guests that I had, you know, a year and a half ago, and I love that. So please check it out. If you decide that you want to learn as much as you can about what really is going on as quickly as possible, there are many, many older podcasts which are still very relevant, and the guests are wonderful. Of course, if you ever lose track of where I'm broadcasting now, or if you just want to read my blog or contact me, go to robertagrimes.com. I do read and answer every email. Some, there are days when I get to do almost nothing else. For now, though, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I'm grateful to you for listening. Enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.